It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. A much more normal Tuesday today. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're live here in Sacramento. I'm in Sacramento anyway.
I'm in Sacramento.
We're both in Sacramento.
We are both.
Congratulations to us. I'm really proud of us. We've made it, and so have the 49ers. They beat the New York Jets 32-19 last night. An impressive all-around game, I thought, from San Francisco. Was it perfect? By no means, but also in week one, you're allowed some mistakes. We talked about that yesterday, just kind of around the NFL. A lot of teams maybe not playing at the level you thought they would, but in the modern NFL, with the way things go now, week one, sometimes week two into week three, are almost treated as preseason games. You take the wins where you can get them. But I thought, aside from just getting a win, I thought the 49ers looked really good last night.
Oh, no, I thought they looked great. There were so many moments where they looked like the team that you think is going to be there in, you know, week eight, week 10, but cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the mistakes that we saw, like very specifically, some of the drops that we saw, some of the just really strange errors that you saw, they'll get cleaned up. And to me, that was about as good a week one as you're going to get, especially with your star running back not there.
Yeah, and we'll get to the running back of it all for sure. But the 49ers, they go on, they score eight consecutive drives after scuffling out of the gate. They punted on their first drive. Their next drive, they go three and out, but they got the great field position because of the forced fumble by Fred Warner and the recovery from Malik Collins. So they get the good field position. But again, three and out, they're kicking a long field goal. They take a 3-0 lead. That's great. But this was against, this was, and then they went on and pulled away for a 32-19 win. They score eight consecutive drives. And this is an opponent that, and we'll get into the Jets later. We're not on a New York radio station, so I don't want to spend too much time on them. But this is a team that a lot of people, a lot of smart football people, have either winning their division, going to the AFC title game, going to the Super Bowl. Some people have them winning the Super Bowl. If the Jets really are a contender, and again, we can dive into the Jets of it all later, but if the Jets really are a contender, if they are going to be a Super Bowl type of team, that makes this 10 times more impressive to me, what we saw from the 49ers last night. Not just that they won, but that they dominated the game in the way they did.
Oh, no, it was a complete domination. Like, the way that you dominated, that they dominated the line was just crazy. Both sides of the ball, but The run game was just crazy. And you know what? For that matter, what they did to Breece Hall was like really, really impressive.
Yeah.
Like he had a couple of nice runs late just to get his yards up a little bit. But even that was like they had stopped him. And I thought they didn't put the pressure on Rodgers that I wanted them to put on Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's kind of like, I don't know. And in the grand scheme of things, there were so many things that they did right. And again, I think the Jets are a good team. I don't know that they're a great team, but they're a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we'll see that throughout the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. But this was a 49ers team that was laser focused and ready. And I think that that's something that, you know, you kind of worried about with all of the chaos of the buildup to the season.
Big time, dude.
Are they ready for the moment? And are they ready for Monday Night Football? And the answer is absolutely they were ready.
You talk about Breece Hall. Breece Hall is one of the probably three or four best backs in the league.
Yes.
Comfortably top five. If you tell every defensive coordinator, hey, you can help, you can hold Breece Hall to 16 carries for 54 yards and a touchdown.
Yep.
Every single one of them is taking it. You have some that might be like, no, we're going to not give up any touchdowns. Okay, that's fine. But 16 for 54, like that's how much he's going to impact the game. I think a lot of teams would take that. But you mentioned the 49ers offensive line in their run game. There were, and you know me, negative Nancy over here. Negative Nick. The way I didn't see a path to the if you told me the 49ers won 32-19, I'd be like, oh, okay. Jets turned it over a couple times, okay, I can see it. But if you told me that the Niners ran it, what did they go for? 181 yards on 37 carries before the final kneel down.
Oh yeah.
would have said no chance, dude. Either that or the Jets were super banged up up front. Like that's a Jet, that was their calling card last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets had one of the if not the best defense in the league last year. Robert Saleh had that group playing really well. It's Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed and Quinnen Williams. And I know they didn't have Hassan Reddick. That's obviously a big loss. But this is a loaded defense. It's really sound. CJ Mosley in the second level. They are so sound, just like we know a Robert Saleh defense to be. We saw it here in San Francisco. And I didn't think there was any way that we were going to come out of last night's game going, man, the Niners just took it to them on both sides of the ball. They were the aggressor. They were the more physical team. I thought it would be a physical game, but I thought from both sides, I thought these teams would look really evenly matched. And maybe by week, maybe if they meet again in the Super Bowl, maybe they will be evenly matched by then. But they weren't in week one. And these are two teams that a lot of people expect to contend for the Super Bowl, and the 49ers looked like that last night, and the Jets did not.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the offensive line just kind of shoving them around. I mean, what we saw from a guy who, like, realistically, like, Jordan Mason had never rushed 28 times in a college game or in a high school game. I mean, this was like you just kept feeding this one dude, and the way that the offensive line just manhandled the Jets' defensive line. And then at one point we have Trent Williams goes back to the locker room, gets an IV, and comes back out and just like continues to dominate. It was, to me, like watching the offensive line, there were some mistakes. There was a hold.
Yeah, sure.
You know, again, that's the, if we're going to like, you know, talk about like some of the issues with Colt McKivitz.
Wasn't perfect.
No. Like he makes errors that are silly.
Sure.
But still, I thought that like overall, just to go out there and beat up, show the dominance of the front of the offensive line and push another team around for four quarters was pretty crazy.
Yeah, man. I directly mentioned yesterday that Chris Forster, the 49ers offensive line coach, said that, it might have been a couple days ago, whenever we mentioned this on the show, he said that Trent Williams is going to play a full workload, a full snap load, unless we play like 80 snaps, and then there might be a rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't think there's any way the Niners are getting anywhere close to that number of snaps. Jets defense way too good. Trent Williams is going to comfortably play the whole game because the Niners aren't going to, they're going to be in the 70 offensive snaps.
That's a lot.
That's so many. that doesn't even account for the plays that were called back due to penalty. So overall, really, really impressive. And that impressive performance headlined by Jordan Mason, the undrafted free agent signing from 3 years ago, 28 carries, 147 yards, a touchdown. He also had a catch for 5 yards. Career night in every facet. I think his previous career high in carries was 11. I don't want to say this was unexpected. It was unexpected from the standpoint of, I think we all thought Christian McCaffrey was going to play, and we'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch Jordan Mason run throughout his career, whether it was as a rookie in 2022 or last year in mop-up duty when he would get on the field, it was really clear, hey, man, this guy should probably touch the ball more.
Yeah.
This guy is a hot. This guy is hard to bring down.
Mm-hmm.
He runs angry. He can get vertical. He can get east to west when he needs to. He's got great vision. He's one cut and go. He finishes runs. I thought that there was always a case to make for Jordan Mason to get more touches. And last night, it's hard to make a louder case than that.
No, I think he just ran angry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you're hoping that you get from a running back. You're hoping that the guy understands a moment, that he steps onto the field, and he doesn't try to do what Christian McCaffrey does. He does what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows what his identity is. I thought there were a couple of plays where he cut the ball back early, way too early, and got tackled instead of following the offensive line. I thought he probably left like 15, 20 yards on the field, but that doesn't really matter. He was so impressive, like from start to finish, and just the toughness that he played with, the sort of smash mouth brand that he brought that the Niners really haven't had. Because while McCaffrey is an outstanding runner, you don't feel like smash mouth from McCaffrey. This was like a violent runner, like literally clawing and fighting for every yard. And I thought it was super impressive to watch a young player just step up into a role and figure it out.
Yeah, and that's not to say Christian McCaffrey's not physical or won't finish a run, but that is like Jordan Mason's style.
Yeah, yeah.
Jordan Mason is seeking contact. He wants to hit somebody. Mm-hmm. And to your point, I thought he spent a lot of time running into his own offensive line last night. That's something that he's going to have to fix moving forward.
That's just patience.
You can't leave yards on the field because you're slowing yourself down running into your own dudes.
Yeah.
So like you said, I think that's just a matter of, he had 83 career carries coming into last night, and he had more than a quarter of that just last night.
Oh no, it was
he had 40 rushing attempts last season. That's 12 fewer than he had last night in one game.
I think it's interesting too, like we kept hearing it throughout the night that they were comparing like the performance that he was having to what we've seen from not only Kyle Shanahan, but Mike Shanahan, and sort of the one cut runner,
mm-hmm.
the guy who just gets to the right spot and then boom, he's gone. And, you know, they brought up Terrell Davis. They brought up some of the other guys that both father and son have had in this type of system that they look for. And I think that's one of the interesting things about Shanahan is that there is like a brand of runner that he's always looking for. And again, I don't think Christian McCaffrey necessarily fits the overall brand of runner that Shanahan usually looks for. He's just one of the best players in the NFL.
Yep.
And so you're like, okay, like we'll figure out how to
yeah.
to use him mm-hmm. in our system in the right way, you know, yes. all the pass catches and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And I thought it was interesting that they were, you know, when they needed to go away from, or when they needed like sort of a passing down,
mm-hmm.
that they used Kyle Juszczyk a little bit more than maybe he was in the game plan for if McCaffrey would have been there.
Yeah.
As opposed to just using Mason. And I thought that their ability to sort of move all those guys around. We had the play like in the early third quarter, and I'm sitting here watching, you know, it's a play where Juwan Jennings kind of tweaked his ankle, right?
Yeah.
And he goes down.
Insane that wasn't called a hip drop tackle, by the way.
Yeah.
They outlawed that play very specifically this offseason.
He goes to the sideline, right?
Uh-huh.
And they show him, he's kind of limping, he's got his helmet off, his red hair. Mm-hmm. And then he walks by Ayuk and Debo.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, wait, Ayuk, Debo, and Jennings are all off the field. Like, mm-hmm. what are they doing? And then next thing you know, I'm like, well, this has got to be a run.
Mm-hmm.
Purdy drops back and he passes the ball. And you're like, they just went out there and ran an offensive play where they threw the ball
mm-hmm.
without Ayuk, Debo, Jennings, or McCaffrey. Like what? How does that even work? And boom, there they are. They're just moving the ball down the field. Yep. It just kind of showed you the system was on display as yeah. much as the individual was on display. Like really, really impressive.
That's one of the things that Kyle Shanahan I think does so well too, is, and that's part of what makes him special as an offensive coach. Say what you will about him as a game manager or whatever, and we'll get to game management stuff, yeah. I promise. We have nitpicks later in the show. Vibes are good, but we've got some nitpicking to do a little bit later on. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're hanging out with you till noon here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. But it's the deception and the ability to run a personnel grouping out on the field and having everything look like a run. The formation looks like a run. The personnel grouping looks like a run. Even the way the play starts is going to look like a run. And then, oh, it's a pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, Kyle Juszczyk's wide open. Or, oh, I guess now it's going to be Jacob Cowing was wide open. Or pick random player that you did not even consider being a factor.
Yeah, who's a tight end that actually had a target that I...
Eric Saubert.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even
worst
know.
Throw of the night for Purdy on that one, by the way.
Yeah.
No, we'll...
yeah.
Get to Brock Purdy a little bit later as well. But we got to talk about Christian McCaffrey. If you're going to talk about the Jordan Mason night, evening.
Yes.
It started with pregame. And I don't have the sound here, but Adam Schefter went on the Pat McAfee show. And just very casually dropped that Christian McCaffrey, the Achilles injury isn't new, and that this is part of the calf and Achilles injuries that he sustained in week 17 of last year. And that forced him out of week 18, but then he went on in the playoffs. I believe it was 98%, 91%, and 95% of snaps he played in their three playoff games. Sits out virtually the entire summer. And then is questionable when he does return. The vibe didn't feel great. And you and I talked about, like, wait, there's an Achilles aspect to this? Like, that can't be good. And then Schefter casually going like, oh yeah, he's been dealing with this since December.
Mm.
Like, I'm sorry, what? Like, so that was the first red flag. Here's how all of this started. So I'm sure if you're listening to this program, you are fully aware of how all this played out with McCaffrey getting scratched, Jordan Mason's starter, Jordan Mason dominates, now we're here. But there were some things going on kind of behind the scenes. And I think the 49ers might get in some trouble for this. Maybe.
I'm thinking that they might as well.
So we're going to have Adam Schefter talk to you here. Here's what Adam Schefter reported before the game. So this is breaking news right after the 49ers announced that Christian McCaffrey was going to be out. Here's what Adam Schefter had to say.
The 49ers listed their inactives moments ago, and 49ers standout running back Christian McCaffrey is out tonight. He's not going to be active, came out, did not feel right with the calf, the Achilles. It's been an issue. He was limited in practice last week. The 49ers listed him as questionable. They thought he was going to be able to play. He expressed confidence that he was going to be able to play. People thought it would be a full workload for Christian McCaffrey, but today it just didn't feel right. And so tonight, in the first game of the season, Christian McCaffrey is inactive, and I would expect Jordan Mason to replace him in the starting lineup and to absorb all the carries that Christian McCaffrey would have gotten that he now won't. He is inactive tonight. We'll see whether he can go in week two, Scott.
Okay, so he came out. He tried to give it a go, just couldn't do it. All right, he's going to be scratched, right? Now, remember, Christian McCaffrey told reporters on Friday, after Friday's practice, not concerned about the injury, no doubt I'm going to play. Well, here's more Schefter after he talked to some people with the 49ers.
Well, I spoke to various 49ers officials here, Scott, and what I was able to take away is this. On Friday, Christian McCaffrey pulled himself out of practice. They were not overly concerned. They did not think it was a big deal. They thought and expected that he would be able to go tonight. The issue was he came in today for treatment, and the calf still was tight. Now, let's keep in mind, he basically didn't practice all summer long. It was not just a calf, but it was also his Achilles. So you've got two issues here. And they decided, in the interest of being a long season, to hold him out tonight, not to activate him, to put him on the bench. Jordan Mason is going to start tonight. And not only is Christian McCaffrey out tonight, but there's a real chance he's not going to play on Sunday either.
Okay, so all of this tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Christian McCaffrey pulled himself out of practice on Friday. They list him as questionable on Saturday. He went out there. He tried to give it a go. Got treatment. Calf still tight. You know what? Hey, this is an 18-week season. We're playing for February, not for September. McCaffrey, you're going to sit out this game. Thanks for giving it a go. You were questionable, but that means 50-50 chance of playing, but it's a thumbs down. He's not going to play. Jordan Mason, you're in. That supposedly all happened Monday.
Mm.
By that timeline that Adam Schefter just laid out, Jordan Mason would have found out when, about the time we all did, that he was going to be the 49ers starting running back. Is that right?
Yeah, that's why everyone's like, hey, like, for this kid to go out and do this on such short notice, just finding out that he's going to go out there and play,
right?
And he's going to be this huge, have the starting job.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, look how well he did not knowing.
Even if he didn't hear it 90 minutes before the game like we all did.
Yeah.
He could have heard it a few hours before the game when McCaffrey got treatment and all that. Well, here's now what Jordan Mason said after the game when he was asked when he found out he would be the starter. You're assuming he's going to say right before the game when you all did.
Yep.
That question right there is...
Oh, nope. That's not. That's the wrong one. Here we go. You're assuming he's going to say, I found out when you all did.
That question
right there. Oh, my God. Here we go. Okay, this is fine. The same audio uploaded twice. It's okay. He said, about Friday night. Friday night is when I found out I was going to start.
Friday night. He says it in a post-game interview.
Yes, on the field after the game.
Yes.
So he's fired up. Interviewer says, yo, when did you find out you were going to start? Because the interviewer is expecting him to say, when you did.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the story. Like, wow, what's that like knowing? That turns out not what he was supposed to say, I guess.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because then he went into his press conference.
Yeah.
After the game of his life, you're expecting this presser to be like, dang, this is crazy. First question is, hey, so when did you find out you were going to play?
Yeah.
That question right there is why I'm at. That's why I don't like really talking to media, because you say one thing wrong, and then, you know, I don't know. Just skip that question.
That sounds like, and again, I'm guessing here, that sounds like a player who went into the locker room before going out to his press conference and got reamed for telling the entire nation, I found out on Friday that I was going to start. And then Christian McCaffrey got listed as questionable, even though there was no chance he was playing. I'd been known I was going to start.
It's tough because this is a young guy who has never, ever been in this situation where everyone is asking him questions. Yeah,
this is not Jordan Mason's fault.
This is not his fault at all.
He did nothing wrong here.
He should have been like on his way to that post-game interview. There should have been a PR person from the San Francisco 49ers telling him exactly what not to say and what to say about the injury. Mm-hmm. This is going to come up. This is going to be part of what's happening. Like, look, as someone who has literally covered basketball forever,
sure. Yep.
Like, there are moments in a press conference where someone either says, I don't know, I don't have an update on that yet, or they come out specifically to tell you what the answer is to that specific question. That should have been on a very short list of, hey, if this gets asked, we need you to say you didn't really know until today.
Game time. Yep.
Yeah, until game time, and, you know, found out when you guys did. Like,
yep.
Whatever it is, like, you know, make sure that you're talking. But, like, look, he's not media savvy. I've had young players tell me some of the strangest things you've ever heard, like coming off a court and in the locker room. Like, I asked a player one time, like, how good does it feel like have every shot go in tonight? Like, uh-huh. You had a great performance. And he goes, yeah, you know, make them, miss them. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day. You know, just blessed to be here. And, you know, like almost like God bless America. And, you know, thanks.
I would like to go on record right now. It very much does matter if you make or miss.
And
that's the point of the sport.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those moments where you can, like, just flay somebody and just burn them to the ground. Because if that quote got out there,
yeah.
People would be like, dude, you are ambivalent to winning.
Right.
Why are you here? Please leave. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And that's where you do at you have discretion as a reporter to say,
sure.
Okay, do I have an I got you moment here, or should I have a more quiet conversation.
But this isn't even that.
Yeah.
This is in front of everybody.
That's the problem. He's on national television in the post-game interview where he says something that, like, man, you can't reel it back. And again, he's not media savvy. He's like, if coming into this game, he typically would be like the 38th person that you might talk to on the team.
Right. He might have a couple of reporters come over and, man, heck of a night from Christian, huh? But
yeah,
you know, maybe. But nobody wants quotes from the backup running back.
No.
So, again, this is not to blame Jordan Mason. And Tyler Jennings in the chat said they listed him as questionable. So where did the chat go? It was sitting there and then it was gone the second I needed it, naturally. He was on the injury report as questionable, so not sure the 49ers can get in trouble. Here's where, and this is why this matters.
Okay.
Because what Jordan Mason knew or didn't know doesn't ultimately matter. He went out and dominated and was awesome. That's not the reason the Jets struggled. The Jets were going to get beat down, whether it was Christian McCaffrey, Jordan Mason, or otherwise last night. So I don't think that that's the problem here. The only and frankly, if you're all about the gamesmanship of it, okay, that's fine too. But there's the reason that this is getting brought up is because like there are rules here that the NFL is going to enforce, I think.
Okay.
Where if the NFL and the NFL do some sort of investigation, or they might not. They might not care. But with how much money there is in betting and how much betting is involved, Joe Fortenbaugh and Carlin versus Joe was incensed by this as a gambling guy. When a player, if the 49ers listed Christian McCaffrey as questionable,
mm-hmm.
And knew there was no chance he would play, you can appreciate the gamesmanship of that as a fan, and you can be like, wow, yeah, every team should do that. But like, there's literally like, you can't. There's a rule against that. That's like saying, oh, every team should just line up their defensive end right next to the quarterback so when he takes a snap, he can sack him. Like, no, there's a rule against it. That's offsides. You can't do that.
Got it.
So that's why this matters. And it's not, they're not going to lose draft picks. They're not going to forfeit the game. They're not going to suspend anybody. No, they're going to get hit with a fine, and that'll be what it is. But that's why this matters. Because if they knew for a fact that Christian McCaffrey was either out or doubtful, then that should have been the designation. But it sounds like, based on what Jordan Mason said, that it was a lot less than 50-50 that Christian McCaffrey was going to play.
Yeah, and I think that there people should know that like designations have a percentage attached to them.
Correct.
So I don't know if they're the identical thing as the NBA, but in the NBA, if you're questionable, it's a 50-50 chance you're going to play. If you're probable, it's 75-25. If you're doubtful, it's 25-75 mm-hmm. that you're going to play. And if you're out, you're out.
Yeah. NFL, same thing. They just 86 the probable. Probable doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why this, and Kyle Shanahan tried to do some damage control after and say, no, we told him to be ready to start, and maybe Bobby Turner, the running backs coach, told him he was going to start to fire him up, you know, to try and get him pumped up, but no, we didn't know until today that, so maybe the NFL is going to take Kyle Shanahan at their word and believe that the player just was excited and heard differently or whatever, but that's the only reason any of this matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's being discussed. But I don't think it had an effect on the outcome. I don't think it had an effect on the way the 49ers played. I don't think it had an effect on the way Jordan Mason played. He was awesome. The 49ers kicked the Jets' ass. That's the thing that matters.
I totally agree. And I hope it doesn't take away from what just happened, because this was a phenomenal game. And
oh, definitely. It
was absolutely dominant. And I also feel bad for a young player who feels like he may have messed up after really his career game. Like, yeah, you man. Want him to
that
be able to, like...
That press conference was sad.
It was, man. Like just, like, very sad and very frustrating to see a player who should have been just feeling it and, like, super excited about what just happened, but wasn't allowed to because of a slip.
Yeah, tough way for Jordan Mason to end his night. But what does his emergence mean for the 49ers going forward? We'll talk about that. We got to talk about Aaron Rodgers. Is he washed? Is he cooked? We'll talk about that. Brock Purdy, Brandon Ayuk's drops, tons to get into from the 49ers win last night over the Jets, and a little bit of Kings news coming up as well. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, hanging out with you until noon here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
I'm sure we could figure it out.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Hey, welcome back in. Sorry, chatty house. I turned the mics off at the break, because if you're watching on Twitch and YouTube, we just hang out through the breaks and we'll chat.
Yeah.
I forgot to turn the mics back on. We had to talk about an off-air thing real quick.
Yes.
And I never turned them back on.
Oh, okay. I thought we were just ignoring everyone.
No, I would never do that.
Yeah.
I would never do that. 49ers 32, New York Jets 19. Jordan Mason, the story of last night, he was outstanding. 28 carries, 147 yards, a touchdown. The most carries by a 49ers running back in the Kyle Shanahan era.
Mm.
The most carries by a 49ers running back since Frank Gore had 31 back in 2011.
A lot. They don't do that anymore.
No, that's not usually a thing teams do that much anymore. I don't know that I saw that this is a question you wrote down, and I heard some radio programs talking about this, and I saw it on TV today too, about how this now devalues what Christian McCaffrey provides to the 49ers.
I don't know that it devalues as much.
We need to slam the brakes on that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot. Okay. Just because another running back is good in the system does not mean that Christian McCaffrey is now somehow like, oh, yeah, no, he's just a run-of-the-mill guy. Like, that's definitely not what the case is here.
No. But I do think that in a 17-game season with a running back that is in his late 20s, that there is going to come a moment where you do need to share the wealth and you need to take some of the pressure off of McCaffrey to really shoulder all of the load. And for me, if you've got a guy who can get you 5 to 8 carries per week,
mm-hmm.
and take some of the stress off mm-hmm. of McCaffrey, keep him more 15 to 17 carries, mm-hmm. and keep him fresh for not only the full 17 games, but you hope is another 3 or 4 games after that, then that would be prudent. I mean, for me, I was a bit shocked to watch one guy carry the ball 28 times, and I kept wondering, is there like no one else active? Like, they can't bring someone else in? They did bring in the rookie running back for one play, and then Shanahan called a timeout and they swapped him back out.
So funny.
It was like, oh,
this is,
no.
But this is kind of what we see in a spot where Kyle Shanahan, and this is another little gripe I have with Kyle Shanahan. You'll see a coach like Andy Reid. Andy Reid's not the only one, but he stands out to me right now. Where in that spot, he's going, all right, rookie, you're up. We got Jordan Mason. He's at 21 carries. He's gonna get a couple plays off. We're moving these guys around in the run game. You are now gonna take on that role. Here you go.
Yeah,
but he doesn't trust him.
Oh no, that was clear.
He'd rather ride the Jordan Mason mobile until the wheels fall off, instead of, hey, we're gonna give Isaac Arendo a carry. We're gonna give him one carry. No, he would rather give Jordan Mason 28. And that's how I think this is going to continue going as long as Christian McCaffrey is out, because we heard from Adam Schefter earlier say that there's a strong possibility he misses week 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if that's the case and Christian McCaffrey's out week 2, I think you're going to see 25 plus Jordan Mason carries again.
Yeah, I kind of felt like when we hit the 28 number, and don't the Niners play a bunch in the first 3 weeks of the season? Like, isn't their schedule slightly compacted?
Just because of the short turnaround here. So they go Monday night to 10 a.m. road start.
Okay, and then
next
week.
But then they're back to Rams?
Who were they saying was playing 3 times in the first 11 days? Is that the Jets? They have a Thursday night game coming up?
Oh, that might be the case. Yeah, the Niners play September 9th, 15th, and 22nd.
Okay, so they're going to have the proper spacing. Yeah. I thought when we got to like 22 carries, ooh, and it was still like you could tell that they were going to keep running Mason.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for me, that was a moment where I'm like, okay, well, maybe McCaffrey's not that far away. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going to go out there and just run this kid until the wheels fall off in this particular game and not at least give, I mean, you could have given Kyle Juszczyk a couple of carries. Just right. To kind of lighten the load just a little bit.
Theoretically, you could.
Yeah.
But Kyle Shanahan has given us no evidence, unless it is Matt Breida and Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman, and it's 3 dudes that he's like, I trust every single one of these guys. This is running back by committee. Mm-hmm. Fantasy owners are going to hate me because I am not letting you know who RB1 is. It's going to be 8, 10, or 12 carries, and that's how it's going to be. But if there's a player that he wants to lean on, he's going to do that. There aren't going to be opportunities for players he doesn't trust.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I just, like, when I was watching this game, I just kept thinking, man, it's just a huge workload to put on a young guy who, and the success was there, mm-hmm. and he should have even had more success. We had the holding penalty on Debo, which I thought was, like, trash.
That was so silly.
That was such a trash call.
It was the right call, though. It was trash on Debo for holding a player who had nothing to do with the play.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you cannot do that.
I guess. I just didn't think it was that egregious. And then you bring up Debo, and that was the other thing that I... like, what are we doing there? Like, even, you know, my son sitting next to me and he's like, man, I don't mind Debo running the ball, but why is he running between the tackles? And I'm like, yeah, I kind of have that same question.
Because if you run outside every single time, then
I guess
it's not super effective.
I guess, like, but you were running the other guy up the middle the whole time. You're running Mason up the middle. And so, like, some variance there. I just...
Do you know why, actually, now that you say that? Because Javon Kinlaw plays for the Jets.
Yeah.
And Javon Kinlaw stinks at football. In relation to defensive tackles in the NFL, he stinks. In relation to me, he's one of the greatest players who's ever lived.
Yeah.
But in the scope of NFL football, Javon Kinlaw is not very good, and the 49ers are moving him around. He had a really, really bad night. And I think that's kind of why. They thought there was going to be room to run in the middle.
Okay.
That's what I think. But to your point, Debo Samuel lines up in the backfield 10 times. I think he got 8 carries. It wasn't a secret what was happening when Debo was lined up in the backfield.
No.
That's the bigger problem to me.
Yeah, my issue is, like, 6 of those carries came, like, they were just straight up rushes up the middle. Mm-hmm. And you know he's going to get popped. And again, it's week 1 of a 17-game season or a 20-something game season. And I don't want my star wide receiver to get hit like that in week 1 when I know that I'm going to need him down the road. So
you also need to, I get it. You also need to win the game, though.
No.
And if he's the running back that you trust, yeah, to what 8 carries is about, kind of what you're asking for to if you're going to spell the starting running back. Okay, yeah, 8-10 carries in that range. Like, that said, I 100% agree with you that running Debo up the middle in week 1 is doing so in a playoff game when, hey, we need a yard and we think Debo is the guy to get us this yard. Okay, fine.
Oh, that's fine.
Sure. Like, yeah. Totally. And I know that's why you have CMC and now that's why you have Jordan Mason and all that. But if you think Debo, okay. But week 1 against the Jets, but also at the same time, Kyle Shanahan is trying to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who he thinks he can help. But can we let Isaac Arendo make a mistake first?
Yeah.
Can we let him mess up before we decide that he can't be on the field?
I wonder if he has messed up behind the scenes just too many times, sure, like in practice or something.
Sure, and he didn't get a ton of practices.
Yeah.
And once practice in the regular season starts, there's not a ton of reps available.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it is. But Debo had 8 carries last night. If Isaac Arendo gets 4 of those,
mm-hmm,
are the 49ers losing the game?
Probably not.
Probably not unless he has fumbling issues or something and a turnover could have swung. Okay, maybe. But if that's the case, if you're drafting a guy in the 4th round and you play him. You felt good enough to trade up for him.
Yeah.
So put him in the football game. That's why you got the points there.
Yeah.
That's why he suited up. Frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. And if you don't feel comfortable, then bring Matt Breida back. Bring someone back that you do feel comfortable with. I mean,
right.
That's it. Like, if you have a feeling, and that's where I do kind of buy the issue with Christian McCaffrey, where while they may have told Jordan Mason on Friday, hey, there's a good chance you're going to be starting on Monday, they probably didn't say we're 100% guaranteed,
mm-hmm,
because I think that they were still looking at McCaffrey as a player that could be there,
mm-hmm,
or if not, they might have brought someone else in to at least, you know, fill in a practice squad mm-hmm, for the last minute and swap him in if you need to. And I just didn't feel like that's what their plan was.
Do they even... Oh, dude, make a play. I don't even think they have a running back on their practice squad.
No.
No, they do. They do, actually. They have Keyshawn Vaughn,
oh,
who was with the team during training camp.
Okay.
In the preseason, but... Again, not a player who was taking a ton of reps. I think he got like 1 carry in the preseason, maybe 2. So it's, again, not a player that Kyle Shanahan trusts. But again, that's where it gets to, like, hey, you got to let guys make a mistake before you decide that you don't trust them anymore.
Yep.
You got to let the players play, dude. But that's, again, that goes back. This goes beyond Isaac Arendo. This is a issue I've had with Kyle Shanahan for several years.
Yeah. And to get back to the original question,
yeah,
like, will this actually change what Christian McCaffrey's role is during the season? It might, Kyle. Like, and I don't think it's going to make him be like, it's not like I'm saying he's not going to be a 1,000-yard rusher or that he's going to be like this incredible, great player.
Mm-hmm.
But he might not be in like the MVP conversation, because there should be a moment where you're looking at McCaffrey and saying, how do we extend him, not just this year, how do we extend him out to 20 something games? How do we extend him out next year, the year after that, and make sure that we're keeping one of the great players in the league as healthy as possible? And you do that by, on occasion, giving someone else an opportunity and trying to avoid just the workload. You know, like, there is definitely a tipping point with every running back. We've seen it time and time again, where the second you hit this many carries, you start become less effective the next season, the season after that, season after that. And so for me, like, preserving Christian McCaffrey, not having Christian McCaffrey on the field for 95% of the snaps, it's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And so I hope that Mason, he's got another week possibly here to show that he's ready to be the guy that can give a little bit of relief here.
I've seen enough.
Yeah.
He's the guy. Christian McCaffrey averaged 21.2 touches a game last year, 17 carries, 4.2 catches. There's no reason that needs to be above like 15.
On
average.
Okay.
15 a game. I think you can get his rushing attempts down to 13 or 14, and I think his reception numbers are gonna fluctuate.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think you can get his carries down to 13 or 14 a game. And again, there are going to be some games where, man, he is dominating, or hey, the Niners have a big last drive and he's awesome and he's at 15 carries going into the drive and he's going to carry it seven times on this series and they're going to score a touchdown. That's fine. That's going to happen. That's game script. But this is to a point now. I've seen enough with Jordan Mason, not just last night. And that's the thing. This isn't a last night only thing. This is, you saw the running, 43 carries as a rookie. He was very, very good. And you went, wow, this is an exciting player. Last year, 40 carries, same thing. Every time he touched the ball, it's like, wow, this guy should run. This guy should play more.
Yeah.
This guy can really go. But there were questions about his pass catching. There were questions about his pass blocking. Last night, we saw him catch a contested third down throw for a first down. We saw him pick up a blitz where the play ended up not counting. But blitzer coming off the edge, I think it was a safety or a corner, comes flying off the edge, and Jordan Mason is kind of caught in the wash, and he identifies the blitzer and circles back around the tackle and defensive end and wallops the blitzer right before he gets to Brock Purdy. That's a play that Purdy's helmet's coming off.
Yeah.
Like, type of play. He was going to get walloped from the blind side. And Jordan Mason came in and picked up that blitz. Those are the kind of things now where, like, dude, I've seen enough. Get Jordan Mason on the field. Christian McCaffrey has seven touches in a row. Get him off the field for half a dozen downs. Let Jordan Mason do this. And this is not about Christian McCaffrey is bad now. This is about February. Because in February, in January, you're in a tough playoff game where you maybe have to go to Detroit now, or you've got to go to Philly, or you've got to go to Dallas. You might have to go to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay looked really good this weekend. If you're in a spot where you need to go on the road, like, okay, now, yeah, you know what? We would like a 25-carry game from a fresh, healthy Christian McCaffrey. That's when you want to spend that ticket. Not in week four against the Patriots or whoever the hell they play in week four.
And those are the games where you're just looking at Shanahan like, man, this is a bad team and you're up a bunch. What are you doing putting the ball in that guy's hands 22, 24 times?
Right.
Like, there was a game last year where the game was over and he's at 19 carries and in 19 touches, and he finishes with 25, 26. And it's like, what are you doing? Because we had this discussion last year. So I don't know. Maybe this is, again, I don't think that Jordan Mason is going to take on this huge role, but I do think that he has an opportunity to prove that he's reliable enough and that you can probably give McCaffrey a little bit of a break.
Could not agree.
And try to, you know, bubble wrap this guy a little bit.
Could not agree more. He's a dog, bro.
Yep.
Here's the thing. That's James. I'm Kyle. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is the Insiders on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on this Tuesday. A fascinating aspect of where the 49ers are now is that I was doing post-game in San Francisco at 95.7 The Game yesterday. And Mark Grandy and Sterling Bennett are the host and co-host on that show. And when we were talking about the game, we got through so many things before we even got to Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a matter of, man, the Niners dragged Brock Purdy along last night. They won in spite of Brock Purdy. Like, no, it wasn't. They just didn't need him to be awesome last night, but he was really freaking good, dude.
Yes.
And that's just the fact that it didn't jump out to me is a testament to where Brock Purdy is as a player. I just expect this now. Oh, dot to Brandon Ayuk in the corner. They got dropped, but that throw, you know what? Best throw of the night. I kind of expect that. Another one to Brandon Ayuk, the deep out where there's pressure in his face late in the game. I think it was on their second to last scoring drive. They had a third down. He steps up, hit Brandon Ayuk on the deep out for 14 yards with pressure in his face. Like, that's a dime.
Mm-hmm.
There was another play where he was going to get sacked, but then kind of snaked up through the pocket and found Debo and just like shoveled the ball to him. And Debo catches it, makes the defender miss, and goes for 10. Like, that's taking a negative play and turning it into a positive one. And that is just individually on Brock Purdy. That's just what he is now. And it is so refreshing coming out of a 49er game and not having the freaking quarterback being the center of attention. Brock Purdy wasn't the greatest last night, but in a week where we saw so much bad quarterback play around the NFL.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible.
Having a quarterback who is in a game where you went, yeah, it wasn't his best, and he's still like above baseline competent. That's such a massive W.
I totally agree. And like, if you look at the two balls that Ayuk dropped, he would have had a very good game. He would have been more like 260, 270. Mm-hmm. It would have been a very, very high level game where you're like, oh, okay, he threw that. He would have hit the touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the Ayuk drop on that play, I think it's interesting. It's one of those things where, like, if you ever play softball or you play baseball, mm-hmm. if you haven't played the outfield in a long time, you forget on like when there's a fly ball and you've got to run in on it, mm-hmm. that the field starts to bounce.
Yeah.
And it's something that like three or four fly balls in, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But the first couple, you got to learn how to run smooth and mm-hmm. learn how to keep your sort of your focus. That's what it felt like. Ayuk made ran a route and just kind of got a little bouncy,
mm-hmm.
and lost his focus for a second.
Shout out ATs.
I still think that.
Sorry, go ahead.
I still think that like what we saw from Brock Purdy, it wasn't game manager. It was just really, really good football. There was even, he went to do a bootleg and there was a defensive mm-hmm. lineman that was running right at him, mm-hmm. just took one little sidestep. And the guy was lost and he got rid of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's these moments where he just shows you that, like, he's got it. Like, he's just cool, calm, collective. Yep. Like, it's his show.
I don't want this to come across like, man, he is Patrick Mahomes. He's not. And that's fine. No, nobody really is.
No.
But the reason that so many people talk up Brock Purdy and like Brock Purdy and believe that he's a good player is because he is so good at avoiding negative plays. And I think that's such an underrated skill because it was something Jimmy Garoppolo was not good at. Jimmy Garoppolo was very, very bad at avoiding negative plays. In fact, he was very, very bad because he created negative plays.
Yes.
And there didn't need to be one. And so now to have Brock Purdy, to have a quarterback who takes, and there are several quarterbacks in the league who do this. This is not unique to him. But having a quarterback who turns a play that is going to be a sack, let's say you're in second and six and you're going to throw it. And instead of taking a sack where you're now third and long, that quarterback turns the play into a first down or turns it into a short gain. So now you're at third and three and you're in that third and short situation.
Mm-hmm.
That is so huge because the difference between third and three and third and 12 is just massive. And so having and not to mention the plays where that negative play turns into a first down or a touchdown, which we've seen Brock Purdy do time and time again. Mm-hmm. I just think that this is now a thing where he has just established himself as, nope, this is just a really damn good quarterback. And is he going to misfire to Kyle Juszczyk in the flat a little bit high? Yep, but what quarterback doesn't? Is he going to make a dangerous throw into double coverage to Eric Saubert? Yeah, that's going to happen sometimes. But go find me a quarterback performance this weekend where the quarterback was pristine and didn't make a single throw where you went, "Ooh."
It didn't happen.
That exact sound, by the way. Ooh.
Yeah. It was ugly.
It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. Brock's good, dude. And the fact that he was as good as he was last night and we didn't talk about him until 55 minutes into our show is a testament to me where he has landed as a signal caller.
Well, that and, I mean, you also have to remember that his primary receiver missed all of camp and showed up like a couple of days ago and dropped two balls.
Dime.
You got to remember that his star running back and pass catching back out of the backfield didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are all these things. So you keep saying, oh, well, he has all these weapons. It's like, mm-hmm. okay. Yeah, he made the most of his weapons. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a running back that was spectacular and that created some space, but he also had the nice play to Juszczyk. He had a nice deep downfield pass to Kittle. He had a really nice couple of passes to Ayuk, even though he wasn't great. And then Juwan Jennings, every time you need a third down, like, go to the big fella. And, yeah.
5 of 5 for 64 yards. His only catch that didn't go for a first down was a 2nd and 9 play where his catch went for, or excuse me, a 3rd and 9 play where his catch went for 8 yards and set up a 4th and 1.
Oh, yeah.
He was their leading receiver last night.
Yeah.
You had Deebo Samuel, 5 for 54. Then you had George Kittle, 4 for 40. And then Kyle Juszczyk. And that Kyle Juszczyk, you mentioned getting him involved as a receiver. That play where he kind of wheels out and gets up the sideline. I swear to God, I watched Jimmy Garoppolo miss that throw 10 times.
Oh, so many times.
And
so Purdy many times.
Drops it in. 34-yard gain. Sets up a touchdown.
Yep.
These are just the little things that he does differently, and it's one of the many reasons that he gives them a chance to win week in and week out. If they have a game where they're not rushing for 180 yards, then yeah, Purdy's going to need to be a little bit better for sure. He was perfect by no means, but he was just good. He was just solid, man.
Yeah, solid in a week where so many weren't.
Yeah, it's week one.
Yeah,
getting your receivers back. Happy with what I saw from Brock Purdy last night. Happy with what I saw from the 49ers last night. We have another hour to go. We got mad props to revisit. We've got keys to the game and some Kings news in early September, mid-September, mid-ish September, or late early September, early mid-September.
Early, late early September.
Early to mid-September Kings news. We'll have that for you next, as well as plenty more NFL talk here on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.